This case has all the makings of a true crime novel, a trial about corruption and betrayal that led investigators to the upper echelons of the Paris Police Department.
It was an investigation into a former minister who was suspected of selling French papers to illegal immigrants or immigrants that were going to become illegal.
The investigation led prosecutors to Bernard Petit, the head of the judicial police. Caught up in the fray, he was charged with leaking confidential information.
And it was terrible. For honest people, it's very difficult. Very difficult for your family, for your children, for your friend.
At the top of his career, Bernard was stripped of his badge and forced to retire. His reputation was in tatters.
It was his whole career. It was the only thing he knew how to do. Catching bad guys, that's all he did. And that's all he ever wanted to do.
The case against Bernard hinged on the testimony of one man.
We had always believed that the trial was going to be really an issue of Bernard's credibility against that of the snitch.
After 7 years, it was finally time to go to court. It was emotional for many.
Everyone in the room was brought to tears. I was brought to tears. It was just pure pain in his voice.
Then something happened that no one could have predicted.
I've never seen them change their mind. I mean, what could have happened at the hearing that could make them change their minds?
I'm Kate Stetson. This is Proof in Trial, Season 3. Ministère Public versus Bernard Petit et autres, or Public Prosecutor versus Bernard Petit et al. In English. Bernard Petit calls himself a simple man. In his spare time, he enjoys reading, painting, and visiting museums with his family. But his former day job was considered anything but simple.
Bernard Petit was the head of the Paris Judicial Police. That's the head of all specialized police forces fighting organized crime, financial crime, drug trafficking. He was a very respected policeman because he had come up from the ranks, come up from the criminal division and organized crime.
That was Arthur de Thomas, my colleague and the lead lawyer in this case. He describes Bernard's background as simple. Growing up in the countryside, Bernard went to police school and finished first in his class. He was smart and quickly moved up the ranks of the organized crimes units to be appointed head of the Parisian Judicial Police. It was a prestigious role for any police officer.
I was very proud of my job, and I got the feeling, real or not, that I was useful for my country and for the humanity in general.
When you meet Bernard, you are struck by how kind and soft-spoken he is. He takes his time before he answers a question and speaks about his role in the police department with great care. You can tell he is proud of what he's accomplished, but too humble to brag. You often forget that this is the man that has tackled some of the toughest crimes in France.
Bernard is a 60-year-old, tall, heavy-built policeman. You can see that he's run a lot on the streets. You can see that he's trained a lot. And at the same time, he's got incredibly blue eyes, a very thin nose, and these glasses, you know, round glasses that he puts back on his nose at the end of every sentence. So he's a sort of mix between a burly character and a, you know, very obviously smart person.
Bernard was appointed head of the judicial police at the end of 2014. It was a critical time for France. Terrorist threats were extremely high and the country was on edge. Then in 2015, the worst happened. Two attacks rocked Paris. The first was on 7 January 2015, when two brothers armed with assault rifles entered the offices of Charlie Hebdo, a satirical magazine, killing 17 people. A second attack occurred just one day later, when a gunman entered a Jewish supermarket, taking its customers hostage. It was considered one of the worst security crises in decades, and the world was watching. Thousands took to the streets to express sympathy for the victims, using the slogan, Je suis Charlie, or I am Charlie. Paris was put on maximum alert, and a major security operation was launched, with Bernard Petit at the helm.
This was an extremely big one because the country was under attack, because policemen had been shot down, because freedom of expression, freedom of press, the Jewish population were targeted. All of this obviously made it an extremely important moment in his career.
As head of the judicial police, Bernard led the investigations, which resulted in the special forces storming the supermarket, shooting the attacker, and freeing 15 hostages. The two brothers who were responsible for the massacre at Charlie Hebdo were tracked down and killed in a police shootout. It was over in 3 days, but the terrorist alert remained high. For Bernard and the rest of the world, it was a sobering time.
I was one of the people who came in the first time when we discovered the bodies of the people killed in Charlie Hebdo. So I spent time, and it cost a lot of time to work on such a subject. And it's also very very sensitive matter, not only for public matter, but also at the private level, because it's very, very stressing, very sad to see and to have to work on such a matter.
Press coverage on how the police swiftly handled the attacks was intense. World leaders also united. Many came to Paris to march and show support for France and the freedom of the press. There was an international outpouring of affection and solidarity for the country. But for Bernard, it was back to business as usual. He returned to his job at what should have been a proud moment for him. But just 3 weeks later, his world was turned upside down.
Miss Bernard Petit comes to his desk at 6 a.m, having a cup of coffee, and watching the news, and sees a band on the bottom of a screen which says, ongoing police raid at the head of the judicial police's offices. There's a knock on his door. His assistant says, Mr. Director, the judges are here for you. They want to talk to you. And he says, I know what this is about. I've just learned about it on TV.
Bernard had no idea about the raid until turning on the television.
It was a terrible period for me. I was told that a guy accused me to give him some information about a judicial case. I knew this guy, and it was someone that I met 20 years before that. And of course, I tried to explain that it was not possible, and it was a lie.
The man accusing Bernard was Philippe Lemaître. Philippe was a low-ranking administrative agent at the Ministry of Interior. He told police that Bernard shared confidential information with him regarding the ongoing investigation of Christian Proutot, the former head of the Elite Rapid Reaction Unit, the equivalent of the U.S. Special Forces. Christian was being accused of trying to extort money from illegal migrants in exchange for fraudulent residency permits. Bernard was arrested for allegedly violating the secrecy of an investigation.
He is taken to what we call police de police, so the internal affairs division, where he is interrogated for 24 hours, taken to meet a judge, indicted. After that, taken to the Ministry of Interior, where he relinquishes his badge, his gun, and he is demoted. By this demotion, he is put on a forced retirement. And since then, his whole career is over, and he's all over the news.
The press named the investigation the Case of Leaks at 36, or 36. The number 36 represents the address of the original headquarters of the Judicial Police, an impressive building in the heart of Paris, used as a backdrop for many films and crime novels. For Bernard, it represented his entire career.
He was extremely depressed First of all, because he was so publicly kicked out, had such press coverage, and people said that he was rotten. In France, when a rotten cop is thrown out of the police, they say he's a ripou, so rotten. For a life policeman, having that type of label put on him was extremely depressing to him.
Bernard turned to his family and immersed himself in his painting and music. He also began to write crime novels and became quite a successful author. As the years passed, he became content with his new life, but he could never fully shake off how he'd been treated and the loss of some of his relationships.
I learned, unfortunately, that the people could be not the people you think. See, a lot of people have like a mask. They hide their personality. They respect you, or they say that they like you because they need you. They need you. Even the political personnel, they need you. When they are in difficulties, in trouble, they need you. Say, please, Mr. Director, we need results. Please, it's very important, and so on. But at the first difficulties, at the first allegation, they throw you away very quickly, very quickly.
As the trial approached, Bernard looked for someone to take over his defense. And that's when he met Arthur.
He's part of the people I like to have for friends. Because it's a normal guy, clever. He tell you the truth. You have a chance, you have no chance. No, you cannot say that. You can say that. Or why did you say that? And so on. He's very frank. And suddenly, I found someone who was able to help me and who understood me.
Arthur began to work on the case alongside new associate François Pérez. Prior to Hogan Lovells, François had been at the prosecutor's office, and this was just his second criminal trial. François's first task was to look at the evidence, which included a wiretap the police had on Christian Proutot. Christian was heard telling Philippe Lemaître he believed he was going to be questioned by police, and Philippe promised to get Christian information. François explains.
That happened on the Friday. Then the next Monday, Mr. Lemaître went to see Mr. Bernard Petit in his office. So all they had was Mr. Lemaître saying that he was going to get as much information as he could regarding this investigation. And he met Mr. Bernard Petit. That was the first evidence they had.
The second piece of evidence prosecutors had was Philippe's statement. He told police that Bernard had personally told him about the investigation.
This Philippe Lemaître said that he had been informed of the existing investigation by Bernard Petit, that he had met with Bernard Petit for an hour in his office at the head of the 36.
Bernard has always admitted he met Philippe in his office. However, records showed he was there for just 15 minutes, not an hour.
This whole story lies on a risk which every person faces in front of a large investigation, which is confirmation bias. Because the way Philippe Lemaître said that Bernard Petit had been the person informing him, because he sounded truthful, because of the fact that by saying so, he was himself putting himself in jeopardy. This led to the internal affairs and the prosecutors believing Lemaître. And by believing him, they took the decision to very publicly expel Bernard Petit. After that, the whole investigation was led by confirmation bias.
It was one man's word against another. However, there was a third person in the office with Bernard and Philippe. Bernard had asked Richard Atlan, his chief of staff, to sit in.
Because Bernard Petit did not really trust Lemaître, he received him in his office, but asked that his chief of staff be there with him because he wanted to have a witness. This is the extent of trust that he had in this guy. And because he had asked his chief of staff to be there, the chief of staff was also indicted, also kicked out of the police, and also faced trial at the same time as Bernard Petit did.
As they prepared for trial, Arthur and François focused on the credibility of Philippe Lemaître, a man who had a rather shaky past.
But it's terrible to see that your life could be broken because of the allegation of a guy who is himself very... you cannot be confident with him, you cannot trust him. But the judge decided to trust him and not me.
Because so many years had passed between Bernard's arrest and the trial, Bernard was very hesitant to go to court and fight. He had moved on and didn't want to revisit the past.
7 years is very long. Very long to have to discuss about that each day and in your mind each second to say what's happened, how is it possible, this guy, how they can believe it? After 1 month, 1 year, you want to stop. You want to stop because you realize that your life is changing in a bad way. It's like a torture to think about that and even to discuss about that with your lawyer. But fortunately, Arthur managed to convince me that it's impossible to stop. And it's really because of him that I went to the court personally with him. Because at the beginning, I wonder if it was really necessary that I was in the court. Why? If the judge believed the guy who accused me, why? And he managed to convince me that the truth will win and that we will manage to establish the truth. And Arthur is saved me from the deep.
You know, a lot of our work was really to persuade Bernard that fighting, meant something. We had a shot at this. And because these accusations were weak, because everyone had believed them, the trial was a whole new opportunity to go ahead and try to convince the judges that Bernard had not violated secrecy, that once you took out the confirmation bias, all you saw was a bunch of lies, and on the other side, very coherent, constant affirmations made by Bernard and his chief of staff.
The three men worked very closely together to prepare. Bernard had a real understanding of the law and proved to be a big help to Arthur and François.
He was a great police officer and he's a great professional. He knew the case by heart. I mean, this was his life, so he knew every pages of the file. But he trusted us with our own analysis, and he trusted us when we prepared the hearing. Quite often, I took the position of the prosecutor, asking him questions, really hard questions, accusing him of bad things. And Bernard was quite funny because every time he was smiling and just telling me, I know you're just acting, François. Don't be afraid. You can ask me a hard question. And I was amazed by his very discreet and kind nature. Not quite the image I would have had of a former chief of the Paris police, you know.
Trials in France are slightly different than those in the United States. Instead of a jury, there is a panel of three judges that hear the evidence. Arthur and François walked into the beautiful new white courtroom in Paris, confident they would find justice for Bernard.
It was very sensitive for me, very sensitive, because I spent almost 40 years in police forces. I was at the place of the guy who is accused by someone, and nobody tried to understand the guy who was accusing me. I think that it's more sexy to attack director of police, and it's more interesting than to have interest in the people who charge him, I'm sure. And so it was awful.
Because there were many people involved, the trial lasted 3 weeks. Bernard and his chief of staff were on trial, as well as Philippe Lemaître, Christian Proutot, and others who were suspected of having been involved.
And our position coming into the trial was that obviously there had been leaks in this investigation. That was obvious from the wiretaps. But the leaks had happened somewhere else, not at the 36. And that Bernard and his chief of staff had been just, you know, political pawns in a sort of greater issue.
The first to testify was Philippe Lemaître. Arthur and Francois had spent a long time preparing questions for Philippe because they knew they'd have a hard time getting him to talk.
We just wanted to ask him questions that will raise doubts in the minds of the judges. And so when the moment came for us to ask questions, Arthur basically told me to go ahead with the nod of his head. And to be honest, I had a terrible stage fright a few seconds before I stood up.
Francois's stage fright was soon forgotten as he began to question him. As expected, Philippe refused to answer his questions directly, often replying, "I cannot answer this," or, "I believe in what I said and in what I heard. I won't change my mind." His hesitancy to answer began to raise doubts in the courtroom.
It was an incredible moment, because all of a sudden the case completely fell apart. The questions we asked, the way we had prepared them with François. François had done an incredible job of preparing all the questioning. The way we asked those questions, after a while, you know, we started to see on the judges' faces how much they realized that his credibility was really not there.
It was then Bernard's turn to answer questions. For the prosecution, one of the questions they had for Bernard was, why did he agree to meet with Philippe?
They said, why would you, the head of the 36, the head of the 36, why would you receive this low-level ranking administrative agent to talk to him? And he said, because I did not become the head of the judicial police by not talking to anyone. I talk to everyone, because that's who I am. My door is always open. I talk to a representative of the trade union. I talk to the head of the prosecutor's office. I talk to everyone. My door is always open for everyone. However, because I did not trust him, I talked to him and I accepted to receive him in my office, but with someone present.
The second question on the prosecutor's minds was, what did Bernard and Philippe Lemaître talk about when they met?
Mr. Lemaître obviously came to see Bernard to get some information. But Mr. Lemaître is quite smart. He didn't ask Bernard, "Yeah, I just heard from Mr. Proutot's investigation. Can you tell me about it so I can tell Mr. Proutot what's happening?" That's not what happened. Mr. Lemaître came in the office and suggested that he understood that someone told him that there was an investigation about Mr. Proutot. And that, this is a casual chat with Mr. Petit. When Mr. Lemaître asked Mr. Petit about this investigation regarding Mr. Proutot, Bernard couldn't say anything because he was not aware of this investigation.
But it was when one of the judges asked Bernard a simple question that he was finally able to open up and tell his story.
I'll never forget what happened during Bernard's hearing. Bernard began by telling his story calmly with I think the words that he had prepared. And he held on like that for maybe 2 or 3 minutes before just exploding and just letting his pain out. I mean, we're talking about a guy who dedicated his life to the police, and his entire life was broken suddenly based on the lie of Mr. Lemaître. And so the pain of Bernard just became obvious to everyone. And the 2 hours that followed were just a moment of truth and justice. So Bernard told his life story, how his life had been turned upside down by the lies of Mr. Lemaître. And there was a very clear contrast between him and Mr. Lemaître. Mr. Lemaître, the day before, had shown himself to be someone who had spent his career from drifting from one administration to another while just spreading rumors about anything and everything. He had ruined the life of Bernard, who is, everyone can see that, an exceptional man who had dedicated his life to the police. Everyone in the room, Even one of the two prosecutors was brought to tears. I was brought to tears. And we could feel that it was a complete change from what the previous 2 weeks of hearings had been. For the first time in the trial, we were listening to a man who was speaking with the utmost honesty.
At one point in his testimony, Bernard turned to his former chief of staff and said, "Richard, you're just here because of me, and I'm so sorry." Then, after all the testimony had been heard, the prosecution made a crucial decision, one that rarely happens in a French courtroom.
On the last day, when prosecution started really delivering their final argument, when it came up to Bernard, they said, you know, when the prosecution is wrong, it is always in its honor to admit that it is. And because sometimes there is a doubt, the prosecution should be in a position to say, this trial has demonstrated that a doubt exists, and as a prosecutor, I'm not going to ask for this person to be convicted. And in this case, this is not what I'm going to do. In this case, we, the prosecutors, consider that there is not only a doubt, there is absolutely nothing that can be held against Bernard Petit and his chief of staff. And therefore, we ask not only that you not convict him because there's a doubt, but we ask that you not convict them because there is nothing there.
It was a surprise for everyone to hear the prosecution suggest the case against Bernard should be dropped. It was an extraordinary twist, but one that was met with great relief.
I've never seen them change their mind. This is basically human nature, and we don't want to be wrong, and the justice cannot be wrong. I mean, this is a case that took 7 years of investigation. So the investigating judge in charge of this investigation could have changed his mind during 7 years. The prosecutor could have changed his mind during 7 years. What could have happened at the hearing that could make them change their minds? And that's what happened.
While the request for dismissal by the prosecution was a moral victory, it didn't automatically mean that Bernard would be acquitted.
Once the trial has started, the judges can do whatever they want, including if the prosecutors say that they don't want a conviction in the end. They're not bound by the requests of the prosecution. And so, obviously, final arguments, I mean, it's an easier position, but still, it's very serious. And it's also a good time to talk to Bernard. And I said what an honor it had been for me to represent him, what an honor it had been to walk on this journey towards truth, what an incredible trial it had been to see somebody's whole position just crumble apart on simple questions which should have been asked by people before me. And in the end, I said, look, you know, you're not going to be in a position to give him his badge back. Yeah, Bernard, yeah, I turned to him and I said, I'm sorry, you'll never get your police card back. But you can give him back his honor. And that is so important.
As the team walked out of the courtroom with Bernard, they were fairly confident they had done what was needed to clear Bernard's name. But they had to wait 2 weeks before they returned to court for the judge's final decision.
In the end, the court sided with the prosecution, sided with us, and I believe sided with the truth. It was an absolutely great moment to be there with Bernard. He was, I believe, relieved, not ecstatic, relieved. He came out of the courtroom just smiling and, you know, didn't want to make any comments, didn't want to talk to anyone. It was just a sort of easily happy moment.
I wanted to kiss him, but he was not very possible in front of the court. And so, but at the end, yes, I wanted to kiss him. But no, positive moment and very good moment is the beer that we shared together. And after my family, they come back and it changed a lot of things. I enter in a new world. When we got this decision of the jurisdiction, I understood that I enter in a new world. And so it's a the old life, the new world.
Bernard continues to write and spend time with his family. So far, he has written 3 crime novels, one of which he sold the rights to be made into a streaming television series.
I believe he's extremely happy because he's proud of himself again. I think he never ceased to be, but he was ashamed to meet his former colleagues. He was ashamed to meet cops. Now he looks them in the eye.
You can find more information about our litigation team at HoganLovells.com. I hope you'll join us for the next episode of Proof in Trial. Until next time, I'm Kate Stetson.